Are you tired of cheesy, shallow Christian t-shirts? So are we, and that's why I am excited to share Grace and Glory Creative with you. It's a small, family-run shop where every design is both beautiful and biblically faithful. As a grateful homemaker and homeschooling mom, she wanted to create something that truly honored God. With the support of her husband and two boys, they have spent the past year designing shirts, mugs, hats, and more that reflect the truths that we hold dear: biblical womanhood, Reformed theology, Christ-centered living. She has Easter designs that are now available, with Homeschool Mom and Abortion Abolition collections coming this spring. They carry a wide range of sizes, from newborn onesies all the way to 3XL, so you can find something for your whole family. Her top priority is her family, but she also cares deeply about her customers and strives to provide excellent products and services. We would love for you to take a look at their shop, so visit Grace and Glory today. Enter FRUITFUL15 for 15% off of your purchase at checkout. That's FRUITFUL15. Welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast, where we're serving up gospel-fueled courage to the Christian woman to remain faithful in her calling. Hello, and welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. I am Jordan Sparks here with Becky McNeely today, and we are interviewing Misty Winkler. So if you have been anywhere around Christian women's circles online, you've probably heard of Misty Winkler. We did a Titus 2 class at our church where we talked all about homeschooling, and we gave out your book. Was that last year? Or maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, a couple of years ago. We gave out The Convivial Homeschool, and we all very much loved that book, and it was very helpful to all the homeschooling families in our church. So thank you for that. But today we are actually going to be talking about your book, Simplified Organization. So when did you write this book? When did you write Convivial Homeschool? I know you have more books, but those are the two that I am most familiar with. So tell us a little first about your books.
Yeah, those are my two, what I think of as my real books. Okay. I have a couple other, like, really little, like, How to Use a Planner Without Wasting Time is more of like a booklet. So Convivial Homeschool was my first book, and that came out the end of 2021. And then Simplified Organization came out at the end of 2023.
Okay.
So still newish.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe for those who aren't familiar with you or your work online. Tell us a little bit about you and your family and what you do.
Yeah. So my husband and I, we've been married for about 24 years now. We were both homeschooled, you know, in the 80s and 90s when it was very weird. And we got married at 19 with 1 year of college to go, and then started our family at 21, and we have 5 kids, and now our oldest is 21 and married with a baby. Uh-huh. So we are 42-year-old grandparents, and it's
what
the best
blessing.
Thing ever.
Yeah, that is so cool.
Yes. So we have 2 graduates. Our oldest 2 sons are both graduated from our homeschool and out. Our oldest son's a real estate agent. Our second son is a junior at New St. Andrews College. And then we have 3 still at home, a 17-year-old daughter who will graduate this May, a 15-year-old son who has his driver's permit. So one more after that, and I will not have to do that anymore. And then our youngest is 12. Which she pointed out, Mom, it's the age that you love to talk about.
Oh.
But she promised to be my best 12-year-old ever. So okay. We'll see. The day after she promised to be the best 12-year-old, she did cry over her math. So I'm like, see, you're 12. It's all right.
Perfect example of being 12.
Exactly.
That's great. So do you live in Idaho?
Yes, we moved to Moscow in January of 2022. So it's been 3 years. I grew up in Kennewick, and we raised our kids in Kennewick, Washington. It's in eastern part of the state. So it's not that far. We can still make it back for a day trip because all of our family is still there.
That's cool. And tell us a little bit about what you do online and how you're helping Christian women throughout the world. You're reaching us all the way in Illinois, so.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I started a blog back in the early 2000s. I think my second son was probably two or three, and blogs were new. Most people didn't know what they were. People actually left comments on blogs back then. And so I just wrote to kind of process my own life. I was the oldest of seven, homeschooled. And so I assumed that I was just going to go into married life, homemaker, mom, and just like, it's no big deal. I'm just going to totally nail this. It's going to be easy peasy. And I didn't. So I was writing, processing my own really growing up time, and all of that is no longer on the internet. I deleted it, but it got me started writing. And at that time in my 20s, I was really trying to get out of the work of homemaking. I realize now, looking back, I thought I was trying to do it the best. I was trying to do it actually the most efficiently. Because my goal was to not give my home any of my brain. Like, I can just set that on autopilot, basically, because it doesn't deserve my attention. So I've got to set up systems so that it can just be on autopilot and not really take up any of my time. And that was a bad attitude that took me a long time to even recognize as the problem. But God kept working on me and kept bringing it up in all kinds of different ways. And I read like every homemaking book out there, and they all like had bits and pieces that I needed. But it felt like there were books that would touch on, you know, the spiritual character elements that you needed as a wife and mother, but it didn't really address the practical. And then the practical stuff just did treat homemaking where it was just a checklist matter. If you have the right checklist, it's going to work. And I was just trying to put together all the pieces to make sense of my own situation, to grow. And then I was writing about it. So I was also trying to process it well enough to communicate it. And so that's kind of how my blog grew and developed. And it's still boggle. I'm still very surprised. Right. I'm like, well, look at what it is. That's got to work, because that was not what I set out to do.
Well, it's a huge blessing. So I guess you haven't always been Mrs. Organization or anything. This is
no.
Okay. It's funny. Some people, it's like they're very naturally bent towards this, and other people, it's like they're very naturally bent the other way. And God's like, oh, this will be funny.
Well, it's funny because I mean, I am organized in that I like to have things orderly and in my own particular placement system. Like, I could organize bookshelves all day long, but that's very different than actually running a household. And a lot of times that desire to be organized, and even the people who are good at being organized in some ways, really actually are perfectionists at heart. And that ends up getting in the way more than it helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because the people get in the way of the perfectionism. Yeah.
People are not perfect.
They're walking on my freshly vacuumed carpet. Yeah. So that actually brings me to the first question I wanted to talk to you about. This is a quote from your book in the introduction where you talk about how homes, after all, shape people. And these people, in turn, shape the culture, the society, nation, and the world into the next generation. So let's not be surprised when that level of influence demands difficult, time-consuming work. And I think that often young women, I know I was, when you first get married, are so surprised that this is really time-consuming and hard. And Maybe it's because we're catechized by society and culture who tells us that the work of a housewife is really brainless and boring and dull. Or maybe it's a tactic of the enemy that to like make us feel like, no, you're doing it wrong. And that's why it's hard. So how can we as Christian women retrain our brain into a joyful acceptance of the fact that it's hard work? And it's hard work because it's meaningful work. And God's called us to it, and it's doing something that's going to last for generations. So I was just kind of curious your thoughts on that, like how a Christian woman can retrain her mind in that. And then how also can we influence our daughters to prepare them the one day have a household and for it to be difficult and to be joyful about that?
Yeah, I think a big part of that just change of mindset about what our home is for and how meaningful it is, and then passing that on to our daughters begins by rejecting the idea that the perfect checklist is the missing piece, where we end up separating out our brain and attention and care, our personal engagement with our home, with the cleanliness, and we want to kind of outsource the keeping of the home, even if we're still doing it, we are trying to diminish the attention and care that it takes by, finding the exact right system that's finally going to work. And it's like, well, what is that definition of work? What does it mean when we say, oh, my routines work? And that's one of the places where I realized that when I said I want routines that work, I meant routines that minimize the amount of work it takes. Yeah. And so I went on this downward spiral where I said, well, the best way, the most efficient way to take less time doing the housework is to not care and to just not do it. So I went on this downward spiral in those years of just having only littles. And I had all the excuses, or I used all the excuses anyway, and then had to repent and, while still having toddlers and babies, kind of climb up out of my disengagement. And a part of that was recognizing that it wasn't just menial work. It's not tedious work. It is work that requires our personalities, our engagement, and not just our time and muscle power, but our actual selves. And when we put our actual selves into our homes and our children and our families, then we begin to notice and reap fruit and dividends and be rewarded for that engagement. And we actually learn to love what must be done, which is the subtitle of the book. It's not just about getting the chores done in an efficient way so that the house stays, always clean or everything's done consistently. I think that's another problem word that we have as women, where we throw it around a lot and like, I just want it to be consistent. And we mean same. Like if I get it figured out, then my house will always be the same amount of clean. My meals will always be the same amount of, whichever thing is your thing, healthy or cheap or, whatever is the ideal that you're striving for. And that's not life or people. Sameness isn't our goal as women at home. It's just being personally engaged and giving the current people and the current circumstances the kind of care and attention that they need. We're caretakers. We're not machines.
Yeah.
So consistency isn't quite the right goal.
Yeah. We talk a lot, my husband, especially to men, encouraging them like the home is not just a place of rest and retreat, but it's a place of work and rest. And that I think that's another thing too. Home has so long been seen as just a place of retreat, which praise God for that it is some at times, but it is a place of work, and it should be a place where we are putting our mind and our hands to the plow and doing things. So Becky, did you have anything you wanted to?
Well, on that same note, I liked, Misty, when you said in your book to think of our housework and mothering as tending rather than just getting things done. So our children are not something that we can just check off of a list, right? They're people that are going to have unpredictable needs at unpredictable times, oftentimes inconvenient to the list that we already have pre-made up in our heads of what our day would like, what we would like our day to look like. And one of the things that I loved about one of the encouragements I loved from your book was taking three priorities to write down, because I am a checklist person. And sometimes it makes me feel better if I can check it off and say, okay, I cleaned the toilet. Look, I did something today. Well, helping my daughter who's having a hard time is also doing something, and it's doing something of far greater importance and value than cleaning a toilet. Not that, you know, bathrooms don't need to be cleaned, but my daughter absolutely takes that priority, and I can't check her off of a list, you know, nor do I want to. But I loved that you use the word tending. I love gardening, and hearing that, you know, when you're in the garden, you're always pulling weeds. There's always something to do. You're always in there. You're getting your hands dirty. You're planting new seeds, and some of them come to fruition, and some of them 2 years later will come through the soil. And you go, I didn't plant tomatoes there this year, but here they are, you know. And I loved that, just that mental image of homemaking, of we are tending souls, we're watering souls, we're planting seeds. And one of those seeds that we plant, and you mentioned this in your book as well, is our attitudes. And I loved that last chapter, not to skip, you know, all the way to the end or give too many spoilers, but at the end where you talked about just smile and start and approaching your homemaking with a cheerful attitude of, maybe the first thing you need to write on your list of three priorities for the day is to smile. Smile, yes, at your kids. And you even said in there, which made me feel better, because typically I'm a pretty decently joyful person, but I furrow my brow when I'm thinking, you know? And the kids will come up and go, Mom, what's wrong? I'm like, oh, nothing's wrong. Like, well, you look mad. I'm not. I just have my eyebrows furrowed. But you mentioning that you do that too, and making that conscious effort of, because we value our homemaking, and we know that our children and the people in our homes and the people that come into our homes, or the people we meet as we go out, they are our priority. And smiling sounds like such a small thing to start with, but it really is super impactful. And as I've put that into practice in our own home, it's been wild to see the effect of that on my kids. My children are 6 and 3 and 1. And so seeing their faces light up if I smile, they're just like, oh, hey, Mom. You know, it's wonderful. So I love that you used that word tending. Oh. And along that same line, you mentioned that when you had small children, that was a time of difficulty and kind of mulling through and working through. What would be your biggest piece of advice to a mom who's in that same kind of struggle, who feels like all I'm doing is changing diapers and I'm trying to be positive, but I feel like I physically cannot get on top of anything, even to make sure that people have clean pants, you know, even just those basic things. What would be your biggest advice to moms of little ones, especially in multiplicity, but moms of little ones in general, what would you go back and say?
I think it's so easy in that phase to discount all the work that we actually are spending our day doing. You know, we spend the whole day changing diapers, nursing babies, just, you know, following the toddler around to make parenting. We spend all day parenting and then end the day saying, oh, I didn't get anything done. Yeah. When actually, you spent the whole day doing what mattered most. And one time, it was a little bit in a later stage, but I remember actually at the end of a day, saying to my husband that I didn't get anything done today. And, you know, at that point we had like 10, I guess like a 1-year-old to 10-year-old. I think that's where we were at. And so, you know, the toddler baby plus homeschooling at where it felt, oh, this is real now, or I should be doing more or should be doing better. And it's like, I didn't get anything done today, which is that I didn't get anything that I had planned on my agenda done that day. And even that, I think, was an exaggeration. I didn't get it all done. And he just looked at me and said, why are you lying to yourself? And to stop and realize that, you know, it's not having high standards to not count the work that you did do because you didn't get everything that you wanted to get done. It really is more of a problem to discount the work that we did do than to, you know, be trying to do all the things. And so often when we are doing the things that we wrote down on the checklist or that we had planned the night before, if we get those done, it will often be at the expense of bulldozing the children and being grumpy or stressed. And that is worse. That's not productive. That's not building the home, whereas parenting is. And so just really being careful about how we speak about our life and how we interpret our own life. I think we always have that kind of inner narrator voice going, giving a story of how the day went. That was one thing I noticed when my husband moved from working in an office and being gone all day to working at home, which he did like 14 years ago now, before it was cool. And so I had been used to just telling him how things were going throughout the day on chat and typing out, oh, the, you know, this was happening. And when he then was home all day and just, you know, up to refill his water or whatever, and a part of what was happening in the day, I realized that my stories and my keeping him updated was complaining, actually. And it was an interpretation. I was only giving him certain pieces of information that was not the whole picture. And I was doing that to myself as well. Those were the pieces I was remembering, I was reinforcing in my own mind. And that is ingratitude for all that God was doing in the day, how he was using me with the children. I wasn't noticing that. And that was actually ingratitude. So just watching that inner narrator interpretation and intentionally changing the metaphors and changing the story to be grateful. You know, when in doubt, you know, when you find yourself complaining about changing the diaper, you thank God for the baby. You know, it can be as simple as that, but it's just changing where we're putting our attention. Are we putting our attention on things we don't like or on the things that God really is doing in our life? And it'll be much more easy to smile and to keep working and to fight that grumbling spirit when we answer it with gratitude.
Yeah, I think that is great advice. And you talk in your book also about not seeing yourself as the family janitor.
Right.
And it's like, and you say also in there, or you're not like a photographer. Like, our job is not to be a photographer of perfect scenes, or we're not the family janitor. And I think that can be a big temptation, is to feel sorry for yourself of these tasks mm-hmm. that you have to do and only be remembering, like, I'm just picking up their socks again. Like, that's all I do is just pick up everyone's socks. No one cares about me. But it's a total lie that you're believing. And it's the sin of not being grateful for the blessings that God's given you. So what do you think are some practical ways to pull yourself out of that ingratitude? What are some things that you can do? You said about just thanking God for the baby instead of being dissatisfied with your job. But do you have any other just practical advice for people if they are kind of in a slump of being dissatisfied or grumpy about the chores that they have to do?
I think that so much of it comes down to how we are envisioning our goal and our purpose. And so coming back to truth and replacing thoughts that are off base and pity party or grumpy with truth. And so, you know, you could do that by being grateful and just finding something to thank God for in that thing that you're grumbling about. But also things like writing Bible verses on index cards or post-it notes and putting them in visible places. I call it alignment cards because, you know, you're putting a piece of truth. It doesn't even have to be related to what's going on, but it's God's word. It's truth. You put it somewhere where you can have that in front of your face and change your thoughts just by reading it out loud. And it takes a little bit of effort and a little bit of intention, but it actually works quickly to be putting that truth in by, you know, having scripture verses where you can see them and repeat them and pray them, having quotes that really remind you of your purpose, you know, on the fridge, at the kitchen sink, be learning songs. And at some point, there were a few points where I had a window in front of the sink and I would tape up, you know, a song that we were learning in our church or in our homeschool. And so if I was at the sink, which I always thought took too long, that, I was like, well, I'm reviewing this. I'm like, I like things that double count. And then like, I'm changing my thoughts. I'm not letting my thoughts sit at the sink. It has something else to mull on, to meditate on. And over time, that does bear fruit where we find that our hearts are soft enough to see that the work that we were really actually disrespecting by disliking it isn't that bad. And we can start to see the joy and the glory in those things. Even people are always asking, like, even cleaning the toilet, you can learn to love cleaning the toilet. It's like, actually, it's just not that big of a deal. The payoff, like the payoff of a clean bathroom is actually not that big of a deal.
Yeah, right. It really is a blessing.
It doesn't take
that long. Why is it such a big deal? I remember one time, I always get really morning sick with all my babies. And I remember one time Jared being in the bathroom with me. And I'm like, God, thank you so much that this toilet was clean right now.
Yes.
Thanks, God. Oh, but one thing I've been saying to my kids, because, you know, if you say, kids, let's go clean the basement up, then that'll always be like, I'm doing this and this other person is not doing as much as I'm doing. And one thing I've been saying to them lately is like, don't keep a tally on the work that you're doing, but work to the Lord. It's not a horizontal working of like, I'm doing this many blocks back in the thing and she is only doing this many. But it's like, we shouldn't do that either. It shouldn't be, I worked 4.5 hours today and you worked 10 minutes. You know, we're working to the Lord. This is an offering that we give to him. We should joyfully do it, not keep tally of what we're doing versus what someone else is.
In your book, Misty, you talk about how the goal of our homes is to be abounding in the works, in the work of the Lord. And I like that word abounding. It, some days it definitely feels more abundant than others, you know? You wake up and you're like, wow, the work is really abundant. But as I was reading through that, I thought, you know, that would be a really helpful way to reframe it. Because you talk about telling true stories and how important it is to tell ourselves what's actually happening. We're not the victim of our homes. We are the caretakers of our homes. And we need to be honest in the thoughts that we're having and the way that we're framing our days, because it does impact our attitudes and it impacts the attitudes of the people within our homes and the people who walk in partway through the day, whether it's a husband who comes in multiple times or a husband who comes home at the end of the day. You can still feel what the heart of the home feels like that day. And it's helpful sometimes just to think about, okay, yes, I have an abundant amount of work to do in my home today. And that's a blessing. I have dirty dishes because we have food to eat. We have dirty floors because we have children who can run and play. We have dirty clothes because we have bodies that are growing that are doing active, fun things and require two outfits a day sometimes, you know? So thinking about it of, yes, the work is abundant and it's good work is really helpful.
Yeah, it's that tending again. It's so easy to get off base thinking my job is to do it as if it's going to be done, but almost no housework is ever actually done. So if we're thinking that we have to do it until it's done, like, no wonder we're frustrated.
Even the tagline of your book is learn to love what must be done. And as homemakers, if we have children at home, part of our job is to teach them as well how to do those things. What are, I know you've talked about, you've shared on your podcast and in some other books and things, you've shared different ways to help keep children motivated in a positive way, where it's not, you're not motivating out of frustration or out of consequences, things like that. What are some of your favorite ways to motivate unmotivated children to also learn to love what must be done?
I mean, the most contagious thing is mom doing her work in a motivated fashion. Our kids' issues are often our own mirrored back to us, which is why we find them so irritating.
And why they're so hard to correct.
Yes. Because on the flip side, then children are the best hypocrisy detectors. But then also, I think one thing I notice is that it is also easy for moms to think that, okay, I have this problem, so my responsibility is actually to make sure that my children don't have the same problem. And we move our attention off of dealing with our own sin and onto dealing with it in our kids. And that is disordered. You know, that's not the way that we are supposed to deal with sin. And I mean, we are supposed to deal with our children's sin and help them learn better habits and all of that. But if we're doing that to deflect our attention and our conviction off of ourselves, that will backfire. And it's not that if we get our own house in order, then automatically our children are going to be perfect. But it will be more effective because we'll have dealt with our own sin before God instead of letting that sit in anxiety that we then point at our children over our sins, which increases the amount of trouble and it decreases the kids' motivation. And then when we're training our kids, it also keeps coming back. Training and guiding and shepherding, coaching our kids isn't something that is done. And we don't actually parent our children until they are final products ready to launch into the world. Like, we are still learning things and being sanctified, and God's going to be doing that for our children too. So our goal isn't to have them learn all the lessons perfectly. And our goal is to help them become mature, helpful, responsible adults. But they still won't actually be those things until they are adults. So what I have found with my kids is, like, they finally seem like they get it and they're applying the lessons and doing all the things when they're doing it for someone else as a 17-year-old who's not even doing it for my house anymore. And so, like, I was putting all that effort into the chore system and the everything so that my home would be so, you know, smooth and clean and conflict-free. But that wasn't the point. The point was them launching out into the world. And I was the training ground where they had to keep learning all the lessons. And there were always lessons they were learning and always new things they were trying that needed to be corrected until they're gone. And then they're off learning and applying those lessons for themselves And so again, it's kind of that purpose goal issue again, where we have to be careful that we aren't doing the training of our children for our own benefit.
Yeah. One thing we were chatting about this morning that you talk about in the book is our aim is growth in the fruit of the Spirit, that it's not this perfect system, but it's our sanctification. It's their sanctification. You know, that's what we're aiming towards. And we're aiming towards things like self-control. And that's something that we should actually be praying for the Spirit to help us to grow in us, not just getting this perfect system down that now I can be controlled. But it's like, no, actually, I'm aiming that God would help me through the power of His Spirit to display self-control as I'm doing these things. And that's what I want for my kids too, that God would help them to be self-controlled. So two-part question. One is, how do you navigate trying to be self-controlled and trying to teach that to your children versus being controlling and, you know, having the systems and having the chore charts and all the things? So we'll ask that first, and then I want to peek into your home and how do you do chores?
Yeah, one of my favorite sayings is that the only kind of control we're told to have is self-control. And we do have to come alongside our children and help them with that. But self-control, it's one of the fruits of the Spirit, and so it's similar to something like patience, where if we ask God for more of it, then He grows it in us. He teaches us how by giving us the circumstances that require it, that are outside our current ability. Like if you pray for patience, you're going to be given circumstances that need patience. And you have to, you know, lift harder weights to get stronger. And it's the same with the fruit of the Spirit. Like you have to have those moments that it feels like I can't handle it. And pray for the grace and pray for the fruit of the Spirit, and God gives it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for our children. So if we want them to have self-control, then we have to pray for and provide the opportunities for them to exercise it, and to think of it as exercise rather than a pass-fail test that they keep failing at. It's like, this is a training program. Mm-hmm. These are exercises we're running to strengthen them. So when they don't quite get there, that's not a failure, because this is training.
Yeah.
And that means also not rescuing them from the effects of falling short on, you know, any of those things. It's so easy for moms to want to rescue their kids from any negative consequences of their choices. And so giving them the opportunities to, you know, have their chores and ask to be done by a certain time, or, you know, whatever the standard is that's set, that is slightly challenging but possible for them. And that takes wisdom as a mom with your husband to figure out. But then having consequences and just not making a huge deal out of it, but holding the consequences. It's hard, but that's how we help our kids grow.
Yeah, that's helpful.
I like that you view it as an exercise, lifting heavier weights, more repetitions, mm-hmm. practice, rather than a one and done, you have this, you don't have this. Because that's how we are as adults too. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel like, oh, like, yeah, I'm pretty patient. I got a hold on this. And then you're given a toddler. And you need to grow in that area. So I like that.
Yeah. And how encouraging to help you to be grace-filled as a mm-hmm. parent, as if you see it as this is just training ground. Like, you mess up. I mess up. We mess up. It's okay. This doesn't mean that you are not a self-controlled person. This means God is growing you. So that's really
helpful. Yeah. I mean, we're all going to be growing in all the fruits of the Spirit our whole life. So we want to show them how to go about that, not think that we have to get them to a certain level and then tell them, okay, now you're like graduated from growing in the fruits of the Spirit. Right. Like, not going to happen.
I did it for
you. Just need to, yeah. We need to know just how to handle life.
Yeah. So I want to ask a little bit about your systems. Like, tell people about the brain dump. This has been like life changing for me. Tell people about a little things like, okay, give us an overview of a brain dump, what that is and why it's helpful.
So a brain dump is just whatever is in your head, write it down on paper. It's messy. It's quick. It is not organized. And what we find is that there's more going on in our heads than we even realized. And we know that a lot is going on in our heads. But when we start seeing the words on paper, it gives us the ability to look at it a little bit more objectively. Whereas, I mean, I think we've all experienced just having the same thought on loop, and you can't really, it feels like you can't really get out of it. And if you write it down instead of continually looping it in your head, you can do something about it, even if it's just decide, like, that's not something I'm going to worry about right now.
Yeah.
And so it helps make all those things that we're thinking about concrete. And it allows us to engage our attention and focus where it matters instead of being caught up in just swirling thoughts in our head. I got a brain dump from Getting Things Done by David Allen, which is all about just like doing work in an office. But that's one that I've felt has been most applicable for women at home.
Oh, yeah. I think it's so helpful for the homemaker because we do have a million things going on in our brain, from like cleaning lists to the shoes that are now too small overnight to the bathroom project, to all the things.
Yeah.
And it's all swirling. So it's very helpful to put it down. I do that. And then I also do your like checklist, the top three things, you know, and I was doing where I would just write down a lot of things on a note card. And that was my note card. And I was in a season of feeling overwhelmed. So my husband would look at my note card and he'd be like, okay, this one's okay. This one we're never doing. Nope. That one's just checked off. And he was like helping me through my checklist. And it was such a kindness for him just to be like, nope, that's silly. There's no reason for you to go and like do this random thing outside. So I would encourage people, if you are in a season of feeling overwhelmed, like invite your husband into your checklists, because they can be a great resource to mark some of that off for you of like, this is a silly thing to be concerned about. Focus on these three things. So that was my little tidbit of advice that helped me.
Brandon and I have found too with my brain dump, sometimes he'll look at it and go, that's my job.
Yeah.
Why do you think you're going to clean the gutters? Why is that taking up space in your brain? That's something that I do. You're not climbing up on a ladder to go clean the gutters. That's why I'm here. And so that's helpful too, to know how to delegate and be able to look at it and see, okay, yes, this task really does need to happen. I do need to make the kids' dentist appointments. Mm-hmm. But I don't need to clean the gutters. And that's so I don't even need to take up space in my brain. And it's amazing how when you write all of those things out and you see, my husband used to ask, you know, why are you so stressed? What all do you, I was like, I have to get so many things done. Well, what do you have to get done? And I'd start listing them. And again, he'd kind of go, okay, well, that's silly. That's silly. But now when I write it all out in a brain dump format, I can see, oftentimes now I can just see, okay, that's silly. Why am I even thinking about this? And sometimes you don't even realize that it's an open tab in your mind until it's written down on paper. Okay. And sometimes you see all of those things and then you look to your kids and you think, okay, but what's more important right now? I don't really have to do hardly any of these actually have to be done. But if you have a pocket of time, so let's say both of the children or all the children are napping miraculously at the same time and you have a quiet moment, it's helpful for me to go to my brain dump because it gives me then direction for those pockets of, okay, I have 30 minutes. What on here takes 30 minutes? And what is a top priority, or what part of a project can I just chunk away at? Can I cut out the fabric for that project I need to sew? Mm-hmm. Now's a good time for it. So that has been really helpful too for me.
One more question for you. So for the not organized person, other than just buy the book and start reading, what would be step one? What's just a great place to start for a homemaker that's feeling very unorganized and doesn't know what to do first?
I think in that situation, making it a habit to use a timer, a 10-minute timer, for anything and like everything as much as possible. Just tell yourself 10 minutes, because a big part of that feeling of being overwhelmed is seeing everything all at once and feeling like everything has to be dealt with all at once. And so that paralyzes you from actually starting and doing much of anything. But if instead you can say, okay, for 10 minutes, I'm going to clean the bathroom. Well, you know that you have 10 minutes at that time, and you're just going to stop at 10 minutes. And again, this is not tricking yourself to do more by starting with 10 minutes. Like, there's some habit stuff out there that's like, just put your shoes on and you'll automatically go for a run. It's like, I know how to put my shoes on without going for a run. This is a real 10 minutes actually makes a difference. And so if you say, well, I just don't have time to brain dump, try it for 10 minutes.
Right.
Just do the dishes for 10 minutes. Whatever is bothering you. This is actually my main housekeeping strategy these days. It's not like checklists or zones necessarily, but it's using 10 minute chunks and looking around each day, because the house changes, the state of the house changes so rapidly. Like, okay, which area is really bothering me right now? I'm going to spend 10 minutes there. And it's that open-ended and that free. And when you get used to those 10 minute chunks, you start to realize how much you actually can do.
Yeah.
How much progress you're actually able to make, because so much of our negative spiraling in our heads is telling ourselves we're not getting anything done. And so seeing 10 minute pockets where you really did make a difference builds and increases motivation and satisfaction in your job and hope. It gives you hope for being able to make progress each day.
I completely agree. And I think that it's so surprising how much you can get done in a 10 minute chunk that it helps rewire the brain of like, I'm not as overwhelmed. These things that I have to do, they don't take up a whole day. This takes a 10 minute chunk. Realistically, I can get this amount of dishes done in 10 minutes and that's okay. So I do think that it's just so helpful to see what you can get done in 10 minutes, just as an experiment to help you know that all the things that you have to do that day can be done in a day sometimes. Sometimes they can't, but yeah, it's helpful, I think. Now, I want you to tell everyone where to find you, where to follow you, where to buy your book, all the things.
The book is available on Amazon and my website, which is simplyconvivial.com. And I also have two podcasts, Simply Convivial and Simplified Organization. So Simplified Organization are interview episodes. They're about 20-ish minutes. And most of them are actually with women from my Convivial Circle community, just on what how they're applying these different ideas in different ways, because I love seeing how not cookie cutter households are. And we can be applying these principles in really personal, engaged ways. And so that's Simplified Organization, the podcast. Simply Convivial is like 10-minute pep talks. It's great for using as a 10-minute timer to like, okay, I'm going to fold the laundry while listening to this podcast. And I still blog at simplyconvivial.com. And I just find repeating these ideas has helped me stay engaged with it. And so if I can pass on that just encouragement to stay engaged, then I just keep doing it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was so much fun to have a conversation with you. And I hope you all enjoyed listening and check her out online and check out her books. So anyways, thank you for listening. Until next time.
Hey, everyone. We want to thank you so much for listening to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast and continuing to come back. You guys have certainly been an encouragement to us, and we hope we've been an encouragement to you as well. We want to continue this work, and we need your help to do that.
If you'd head over to the Fruitful and Fearless website, it's just fruitfulandfearless.com. You can find memberships there that are different tiers that contain different benefits to you as well. If you want to just support us for the heck of it because you're enjoying the show, that's always a blessing as well. But we try to make it even more worth it for you with recipes, groups for homeschooling and cooking, baking, natural health. We try to put as many resources on there as we can. But thank you for your support. It greatly helps our family.